Been hungry for some college football? Well, we finally get a taste this weekend. Don't miss any of the action. Jump in at DraftKings Sportsbook. It's a small but mighty slate of games for week zero, including a big matchup in Ireland. This is going to be DraftKings' biggest college football season to date. Plus, all newbies getting into the college spirit, here's something extra special. New DraftKings customers bet $5 to get $200 in bonus bets instantly. Score big with DraftKings all college football season long. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use promo code IHEART. That's promo code IHEART for new customers to get $200 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Only on DraftKings. The crown is yours. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem, call the Virginia Problem Gambling Helpline at 888-532-3500. 21 and over. Virginia only. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. Deposit and eligibility restrictions apply. Terms at dkng.co/ftball.
A musician with technical knowledge can play all the right notes. But one who cares enough to play from the heart gives music soul. At Truist, we believe the same is true for banking. Because when you work with someone who knows a lot and cares even more, you're unstoppable. Truist, leaders in banking, unwavering in care. Start feeling unstoppable. Visit truist.com/care. Truist Bank, member FDIC, leading based on top 10 U.S. commercial bank.
Hello, everybody, and this is The Advisor with Stacey Chalemi. Today, I'm very excited because we have a very, very special guest today. His name is Andy Semichuk, and he is an amazing lawyer. He's an immigration lawyer, but not only is he an immigration lawyer, he is also a very talented author, and he has written 5 books, and we're going to talk about his books, but we're going to start off with his book, Solo Mia. It's the star of the opera, The Golden Age, and he has won awards for his books, and he's just an amazing individual with a captivating story behind it. So I'm so proud to have you on our show. I'm very excited to speak with you, Andy. Can you tell everybody a little about yourself and what you do?
Sure. I'm a U.S. and Canadian immigration attorney. I work with Pace Law Firm in Toronto. Previously, I've worked in the United States 10 years in Los Angeles, 5 years in New York practicing law, and I'm a former UN correspondent. I write for Forbes on immigration, and I, as you mentioned, I've published 5 books. I'm an author, and I'm also a professional speaker. So when we first met and talked, I realized, boy, we've got a lot in common. I think our lives have had parallel tracks.
Yeah, it's amazing. You know, when I spoke to you even before our podcast, I really feel that we do have a lot in common. And the books that you've written are outstanding. And can you tell me a little about what possessed you or your passion behind becoming, you know, because you've been an immigration lawyer for so many years, and then all of a sudden you had this drive and this passion to write books, and you wrote Solo Mia, you know. What drove you? What was your passion to start writing?
Well, if my English professor from university, English 101, learned that today I'm an author and writer, and you know, I'm writing for Forbes and written books that have won awards, he'd turn over in his grave, because I barely made it through first year English at university. He took pity on me and finally passed me at the end of the year, because he knew I couldn't go anywhere without passing his course. But somehow over time, you know, I took a great interest in communication. And I know this is a field you love as well. Mm-hmm. And communication, a reason why I took such interest in communication is my wife, my mother was deaf. She raised me as a single parent, deaf. My father died when I was 9 years old. So she was left with taking care of me. And so, unlike others, to me, communication, especially with my mother, but with her challenges dealing with the world, became very important. And although I did want to work in the legal field, I continually tried to improve my communication skills, both writing and speaking. And over time, I started writing books, and now I have like 5 books that have come out. And I think if you're thinking of writing a book, the challenge is getting the first book out It's, you know, for everybody, it's a challenge. But if you get one book out, chances are very good you're going to be writing several books. And you can, I'll tell you if you're an author or not, if you show me your garage, when you open the garage, if there's books in there, you're an author. You know, you're traveling around with books all over the place. And of course, you want people to read your books. In my case, I realized that one of the most powerful things you can do is tell stories, such as the story I want to tell about Sulamia, because they change people's lives. They give them a sense of meaning, or they lift them motivationally. They give them purpose. They find through such stories, meaningful stories. And let me just share one from Sulamia that I think is very good. This is the 120th anniversary this year of the opera Madame Butterfly. And the story behind Madame Butterfly, which is in my book, is pretty profound. And basically it's this, that initially it's a story about a geisha girl in Japan at the time when Japan was isolated from the world and opened up by the American Navy in the 1880s. And in this story, which was first written up by an American journalist who learned about it on traveling to Japan and wrote this story, and then made into a play, which was shown in London. Mm-hmm. The composer, Puccini, Giacomo Puccini, saw the play and he was moved by the play, and he decided, I have to have this, to put it on as an opera and put it on in La Scala in Italy, which is the leading opera theater in the world. And the story is basically that this geisha girl meets this naval officer named she meets this naval officer, Pinkerton, sorry about that.
That's okay.
And they have a relationship, and they go through a form of marriage in Japan, and they sleep together, and following a short time of being together, Pinkerton announces that he has been called back to the United States and has to leave. But he promises that he'll come back to Chiyo Chiyo-san, this geisha girl.
Mm-hmm.
And unknown to him, Chiyo Chiyo-san is pregnant and is going to have his son. So he leaves, and she waits for his return, waits 4 years or 4 or 5 years for his return. And finally, he does come back. And in the meantime, she has his son, and he's now 4 or 5 years old. And when Pinkerton arrives back in Japan, he has an American wife following with him. And the parents of the child are then faced, Chiyo Chiyo-san and Pinkerton, with this question: what do we do with this child? Do we leave him to live in with a geisha girl in Japan, or should he come back to the United States? And they resolve it's best for him to go back to the United States. And just before he leaves, the child leaves, Chiyo Chiyo-san takes the child off to the side, and she shares these words with the child, her final words with the child, and she says this. She says, look at this face. It is the face of your mother. Remember it. You will never see it again. And after that, she gives the child to Pinkerton, who takes it back to the United States. She ultimately commits hari-kari and dies. That's the story behind the opera. And Puccini put it on at La Scala, but it collapsed. People hated it. They whistled him down. And after it collapsed, he was crestfallen. He didn't know what to do. So he went to his good friend Arturo Toscanini, who was a leading conductor at that time, opera conductor, saying, Arturo, what do I do? And Arturo said to him, there's only one person who can help you resurrect this opera. An opera star who was then already an opera star, namely Sulamia Krushernitska, the character who I wrote the book about, who was my great aunt. my grandmother's sister. At any rate, Toscanini said, go see her, talk to her, see if you can resurrect it. And he did. And Salumiya agreed to perform the lead role. She was about 30 at the time, but the lead role was about a geisha girl, 15. So it was quite a challenge. And in order to get into the role, she wore a Japanese kimono or some dress every day for something like 2 or 3 months before they performed. And yeah, they revised the opera and they performed it to great success in Brescia, a city about 60 miles away from Milan and La Scala. And from there, it went on to world fame. It's one of the great operas today, even today, 120 years later. Yeah. After 100 performances, Salumiya said to him, look, this is the last time that I'm performing. And she gave Puccini back his script at that stage. That story is in the book, in the Salumiya book. I'll just share this one other thing about the book. Look, I'm a grandfather. I'm also a father and a grandfather. I have a daughter and I have a granddaughter. And one of the things I need for them is role models, successful models of women who have achieved greatness in their lives. And this is one such role model. She's not well known today. That's why I published this book in English, so that people may learn about her. And that's why I wanted to share that story with you today.
I think that's amazing. You know, we do need more women role models, that especially that have been, you know, from the days of history. You know, when we look back, and you know, these women, they were so strong, they were so powerful, they were confident, and they felt self-worth, you know, and they believed in whatever the cause was, and they moved forward, and they did whatever they could, and it was a man's world, but yet they still, you know, fought the odds, and they challenged themselves, and they won, because they proved themselves to be worthy women. They made a name for themselves, and at the same time, they became mentors to millions of people. And to have that legacy, to be able to have that book, to be able to share that book with others, and others can see that even back then, they were courageous women out there who, you know, believed in a cause and were going to do anything to make that cause happen. And, you know, and that's what we need that for today's society too, because I think with the media and the way society turns, I think sometimes what is a good role model and what is not a good role model. And it's important to take those women who really made us stand in our history, and really put an imprint in our history, and show people what true role models are. So I think it's wonderful that you wrote that book, and I'm amazed that, and it's wonderful that it was someone from your family, and you're keeping that memory alive by writing that book.
She was a big star, the world's leading soprano in the 1900s, the first decade of the 1900s. And we spoke earlier about Arianna Huffington and her story about Maria Callas, who later, more recently, was world's biggest opera star. Similar story, you know. Right. And one of the intriguing aspects to me about this story was what happened. Why are her male contemporaries, people like Caruso, Puccini, Toscanini, remembered? But why is she not remembered? There's a feminist issue here, you know. And the book goes into that. Part of the reason is she ended up behind the Iron Curtain in World War II, and she was isolated. There's more to that than just that. But it's true. The role model is, this lady was a mentor to Caruso. Now, you know, for you and I, who maybe don't spend every day in opera, doesn't mean very much. But for opera people, they may know, or some of us even who don't pay attention to opera. And by the way, opera is just, this is where she made her career. This is not a book about opera. This is a book about a woman and achievement. And what you can do as a woman and someone seeking to achieve. But she mentored Caruso, and for those who may know Pavarotti, Pavarotti was today's Caruso back then.
Yeah.
So he was of the same class, and she mentored Caruso. So that's an example of what you're talking about women making a difference in the world. And she was, by the way, in the United States in 1928, the same year that the Chrysler Building was built in New York. She came to New York. She performed in New York, Philadelphia, Chicago, in Montreal, in Winnipeg. And like in 1928, during the Roaring Twenties, she was in New York, when Harlem was like the seat of, you know, jazz, like in the Duke Ellington, all these guys. She was there because she loved music and, you know, all kinds of music, including
that
music. So that's a bit from the book. And I thank you for the opportunity to share at least that part of, you know, of my life in terms of writing.
I think it's so important that people have mentors like that, and they read about people like that, because, you know, being able to realize that you can achieve to a higher level. And nowadays you do see a lot of women grouping together and, you know, working together to show that they, you know, and especially in the entrepreneur world or the corporate world or the business world, you know, trying to make a stand for themselves, trying to show that they are able to achieve that anything that, you know, that a male could achieve. And because for the longest time, it wasn't like that, you know, and now things are starting to change. But when you have, you look back in history, it's always been there. It's just that we really need to open our eyes and look at history. And there are many women figures from history that have made huge achievements and have made their mark in the world. It's just a lot of people just don't know about them.
Right. But, you know, I've written a few other books you mentioned, and I'm not going to go into them. They're all on Amazon. If anybody wants to, you know, if they look up my name, Andy Semichuk, they can get my books on Amazon. This particular one, if you look for Solomia, Star of Opera's Golden Age, you'll find it. It's a book with a gold cover, so you'll easily find it. But I should also mention, I'm also a lawyer, and you know, I work in the area of immigration. I write for Forbes on that subject. So when you talked about how did I get into writing and things like that, part of it was writing these articles on immigration themes that helped me build up my you know, knowledge of writing. And I mentioned about the intense interest I have in communication. I know you are a speaker, you know, like a well-known speaker, and that's an area I've been interested in a long time as well. I spent many years studying speaking, going to, you know, meetings once a week, watching people speak, and then giving feedback to speakers. I'm sure you've been in that scenario as well. I like in terms of your life and what you've accomplished, you know, you've talked about epilepsy, for example. You shared a few thoughts with me before, and we talked about how, what I liked about what you said was, you have to, it's important to keep a perspective. And in a conversation I shared with you, if you look at your life as a huge circle, drawn on a piece of paper, problems that you may have in your life, you could depict by drawing either a smaller circle or a dot in the middle of this larger circle. And the key to our lives, which you pointed out in our conversation earlier before we went online, was the perspective of not focusing just on the problems of your life, but the larger picture of your life, and keeping your life in perspective that way. I thought that was a very valuable conversation that we had. It's a good insight.
I think a lot of people, you know, they worry too much, and they focus on a lot of little issues in life that really, you know, we shouldn't have to worry about the little things in life, you know, they could easily be solved. And we shouldn't worry about the problems that haven't occurred. You know, you can't change the future. We don't know what's there. So why worry about it until, you know, a problem occurs, and then you focus on that head on, you know, and you do whatever you can to solve that problem. But, you know, to worry about the, you know, about the little things in life, and to make it more than what it is, or to just aggravate yourself over small things, it's just not worth it. Time is too valuable, you know, and 70% of stress causes illness. So why put yourself in that negative, you know, era, you know, that area? And then, you know, to worry about problems that don't exist, that could, you know, could be, and it might be, and we don't know what's going to be. So just focus on now, focus on what you have in front of you. And I think that's a valuable lesson for everybody. And, you know, I thank you for bringing that up. And, you know, it's an important point that I think people should focus on. But I do like that you had mentioned about another book that you had written about today's society, about jobs and about focusing on balance. And I think that's a great book to bring up. One, you know, maybe you could show that book, because in today's society, I think so many people, you know, the young professional, yes, you know, it's a guide to help people. You know, maybe you can share with people what it's about, because I think it's really important.
Oh, thank you for letting me do that. So in my role as an immigration lawyer at Pace Law Firm here in Toronto, over the years, I've helped thousands of young people going into the work world, getting work visas. And I noticed three common problems that these young people have, and probably most of us have. One or more of these three problems. One is money. The second is time. And the third is balance. And so the question is, how do you deal with these three problems? And briefly, I'll just say the three ways that I deal with each one of the three. In the case of money, I think that's related to the question of your unique ability and finding your unique ability and putting it to the service of others. That would be the key, and I would develop that, and it's developed in the book. In the case of time, I like to work with the 80-20 rule. You know, Pareto's principle, for those that know about the, you know, Italian economist that came up with this, that 20% of the people make 80% of the money. 20% of the effort gives you 80% of the return that you're looking for. So I'd like to explore that in more detail. And in case of balance, which is probably an area that you're more of an expert on than I am, if not on all these areas, I talk about your values, if you depict them in terms of, let's say, a pie chart, and the values may be things like family, or they may be things like God, or they might be things like money or whatever it is. If you isolate the key values of your life, and nobody can do this for you, you have to do it. Your life, your values are your values, nobody else's. You'll end up with a pie chart, and you can measure each value, let's say from 1 to 10. If you imagine like spokes coming out of a bicycle tire, any value can be measured 1 to 10 on a spoke. For example, let's say money. How important is money in your life? Is it one or is it 10? 10 being the most important. Is, family important? 1 or is it 10? And so on. And if you connect all these spokes together, you make a circle. And if you look at your circle and it's a flat tire, then you know you're not in balance. But if your circle looks like a tire, like then you know you are in balance. And then how do you keep yourself in balance? So that's all discussed in my book, The Young Professional, which again is is available on Amazon. This one is a career guidebook. The other one we talked about was kind of a history, personal development book. I also, you know, I'm concerned, like I'm Ukrainian in background. We were talking that I learned that you're Greek in background. Everybody's got some background. You came from somewhere. I came from Ukrainian background. I was born in Canada, but my parents came from Ukraine.
Right.
And right now, Ukraine is a big deal in terms of the war.
Yeah.
And we talked a little bit about that before. I mentioned, you know, someone breaks into your house and says, you know what? I'm living here now. And you say, wait a minute, what are you doing in my house? This is the problem Ukraine has right at the moment on a global scale. And people right now in Washington are meeting, NATO countries are meeting, trying to figure out how to deal with this. And like World War II, which is also discussed, by the way, in my book, my books here, 50 million people died at the end of World War II, you know, by the end of World War II. Why? One of the key reasons was because boundaries of countries were not settled. So after the war, people got together at the UN, at Helsinki, and they said, okay, no more boundary disputes.
Mm-hmm.
These are the boundaries. While signing, these are the boundaries. You want to change, you have to get agreement. You can't just mark, well, all of a sudden, you know, 75 years later, Russia decided they're going to change the boundary.
Yeah.
And so we have this, now we have NATO, you know, meetings talking about what's going on, why is this going on?
Yeah.
Anyway, that's a little bit about what we could talk about, but that's like at the, you know, the big level, high level worries in the world. And, you know, maybe we can't do very much other than be informed. And help to the degree we can. Like two nights ago, Russian bombs bombed a children's hospital in Kyiv, where it's a cancer ward. It was obliterated, you know, little kids out in the streets with masks on, trying to, ridiculous. Anyway, yes. You know, so that's something our leaders have to face, you know, what's coming in that context. And I appreciate the opportunity of at least sharing a few thoughts about that with you.
It's an important subject. There's so many different, you know, wars going on, and you see, and like we had mentioned earlier before we went on air, you know, wars have been going on for centuries and nobody wins. There is no side that is a winner. And the only thing is we lose lives, and we lose, you know, we lose precious lives, and we destroy beautiful, you know, pieces of land that had such beautiful history to it. So not only are people dying, you're destroying history, you're destroying a beautiful, you know, place that, you know, that they're going to have to try to build for, you know, from scratch once everything, you know, gets sustained, if it does. And it's going to take, you know, decades and decades to get to that point. But, you know, it's just no matter, you know, people, if you look back in history, nobody ever won. And yet we still have these people that are still provoking fights and wars, and they're, you know, and no side is a winner. And people are getting hurt, people are getting killed. Even our American soldiers who go in and try to help, they're coming back with post-traumatic stress disorder. You know, we're losing lives also. And so it's a no way win situation. So why does it keep having to happen? You know, people say we're fighting for a cause. There is no cause. You know, it's greed, it's ego, it's about power, it's about, you know, having a big ego, you know, it's about, you know, those are the things that make, you know, war go on, you know. And it's just, and it's very sad because you see so many people, you know, are getting hurt. Nobody's winning, you know, people are getting so involved that they're, you know, that even hatred and anger towards other nationalities are being, you know, are starting to come out, you know, when they're innocent people, they have nothing to do with it, just their culture, you know, where their roots come from. But yet people are showing anger and exerting anger in unconstructive ways towards these individuals. But, you know, is it doing any good? Is it really helping? You know, I don't think so, you know, but, you know, how do we make this? How do we change? How do we wake up people? You know, is the question, you know, will we ever wake up people in this society?
Well, you lead your life as best you can. You do what you can, make contributions wherever you can, and yes. Be open to understand what's going on. And to be on guard for your life and your values, you know, yes. Like freedom, democracy, human rights. These are all, you know, fundamental values that you have to look after. And if you don't attend your garden, your garden's going to have weeds is the way to look at it. So,
right.
But I really am grateful to you for enabling me to comment on these things and share these thoughts with you. I appreciate your work and what you've been doing. I can see, you know, I've learned a lot about you from this visit. I admire you because you're up in the ozone layer up there with all big names. That you've shared, you know, that you know and that you work with. So, you're doing well. Look, this podcast means a lot, I think, you know, especially, you know, your contributions, like through your books and this podcast and the people you've touched with your, you know, your presentations and the videos and so on. It's a legacy. It's a good legacy.
Thank you. And I think you're doing the same thing. You know, you really, by the books that you've written and really bringing your own family's history to life, you know, you're doing the same thing. And, you know, and it's so important because not only are you just keeping a beautiful woman who had such a beautiful history and made such an impact in her era and is a mentor to others, you're bringing her back to, you know, to the surface where other people can learn about her and learn from her from her actions, you know. And so you're doing the same thing. You're doing the same thing and you're making the same contributions, which is wonderful. And, you know, and it's wonderful that you looked at your daughter and you looked at your granddaughter and you want them to realize, you know, that achieve, you know, being, you know, an achiever is important. Leaving a legacy is important. Having a purpose in life is important. And these are things that, you know, people should realize, you know, that we all here for a valid purpose, you know, and figuring out what that purpose is and figuring out what your passion is and then going after it and, you know, doing something good with that. So when you do leave, at least you can leave knowing that you made a valid contribution to this world, you know, and I think that's what it's all about. I really do. And I really thank you. Now, if you had to take everything that you've spoken about today and you really wanted to emphasize on some important factors, what are some of the things you'd like to get across to the listeners today that you really think are important that they understand?
Okay, well, let me say this. It's hard to summarize everything I have like in thoughts.
Yes.
One way is simply to take a look at the books I've mentioned. They're available on Amazon. If you need a list of the books, you can get them at I have a personal website. It's called myworkvisa.com. And there my books are all listed if if you're particularly interested in what books I've published. I think I'll share a key thought in my life, which I hope people will resonate with, you know, that it'll resonate with them. And that is a thought that I took from the great speaker Zig Ziglar, who you may know.
Yes.
And his comment was, you can get anything you want in life if you help enough other people get what they want.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I think that's a brilliant idea. That's a great, there are two philosophies in life.
Yes.
You can get anything you want so long as you help enough other people get what they want.
Is yes. One.
And the other one is give me what I want and to hell with everybody else.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. The more we do Zig's version versus the other one, the better the world will be, in my opinion. Yeah.
Oh, 100%.
Just final thoughts. I hope that the people who are listening will consider what's happening in Ukraine and be sympathetic to that country. It's unfortunate, and they're doing their best to fight, and they're not fighting just for themselves, but for democracy overall. And, mm-hmm. and you know, NATO is talking about that right now in Washington. That's about it. You know, I hope that what I've shared has some benefit to the people who are listening. And thank you for letting me be on your show.
Oh, you're very welcome. And do you do any type of services or consultations for people who may be interested in writing a book or may be interested in learning any of the things that you talk about? Do you do any consultations or services to provide help to others?
Yes. You can reach me by looking at the Pace Law Firm website, pacelawfirm.com, and you can reach me there, my email's there and so on. And I can help anybody who might be interested in that kind of thing, or anything on immigration for that matter.
Wonderful. This has been a very pleasurable experience. I think what you're doing is wonderful. I think all the books that you've written are fabulous. I one of the things that you said and you had mentioned about your grandson has a sense of humor, and you took his jokes and you wrote a book about them to bring, you know, laughter to others and to really keep his little legacy alive too. All those jokes from when he was growing up, because now he's a grown man. But, you know, laughter is the best medicine, I believe. You know, before we go, you know, we can be serious and we can stress ourselves out and we can, you know, but we can only do what we can do, like you mentioned, you know, but if we could look at the better side of life and we can, you know, look at humor, I think humor and laughter are things, if we can incorporate them into our lives, can relieve a lot of stress and bring a lot of joy to our lives. So, you know, I really respect that you did that and you took your grandson's jokes and made them into a book, and they're very cute. And I really think that, you know, humor is something everybody should, you know, try to loosen up and be a little humorous at times, because, you know, it's not worth, you know, being serious and taking everything, you know, to core, and being able to look at life on the brighter side and to laugh off things and to make the best of everything is the best way to go about it.
Can I share one last a little story?
Of course. Yeah.
Okay. This is a humor. It's about parrots. I love parrots, so I'm going to share the story. So it's a story you haven't heard. A lady buys a parrot and comes home, and as she's trying to teach this parrot mm-hmm. how to speak. And people come in and out of her house. So she decided the thing she's going to teach the parrot is to be able to answer the door when someone knocks on the door. So she's trying to teach the parrot, who is it? So mm-hmm. she says to the parrot, who is it? Who is it? Who is it? And she goes to the store to buy some groceries, leaving the parrot alone in the house. And the plumber comes by. He comes, knocks on the door, and the parrot says, who is it? And the plumber says, it's the plumber. And the parrot says, who is it? And the guy says, it's the plumber. And the parrot says, who is it? And the guy gets so exasperated by this that he faints. And he's lying there on the doorstep, and the wife, the mother comes home, the lady comes home, and she sees this guy lying on the doorstep. And she says, oh my goodness, what's happened here? I wonder who is it? And the parrot says, it's the plumber. That story is, I guess, basically tells us, you know, repetition is the way to learn. So you got to read books and, you know, do things like speak and attend on programs like yours to get better and lead our lives in that way. Thanks a million for having me on your show.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for being on the show. This was so enjoyable, and you provided a wealth of information, and I can't wait to read your book. I'm going to read Sola Mia, and I really look forward to getting a copy of it. But thank you so much. You've provided a wealth of knowledge, and I think, I really appreciate all the things that you came on the show and shared with us. So thank you so much for this opportunity. Thank you so much for coming on and sharing.
Okay, great to be on your show.
Oh, thank you. And it's great to have you. And you have a great day.
Take care.
Bye bye.
Been hungry for some college football? Well, we finally get a taste this weekend. Don't miss any of the action. Jump in at DraftKings Sportsbook. It's a small but mighty slate of games for week zero, including a big matchup in Ireland. This is going to be DraftKings' biggest college football season to date. Plus, all newbies getting into the college spirit, here's something extra special. New DraftKings customers bet $5 to get $200 in bonus bets instantly. Score big with DraftKings all college football season long. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use promo code IHEART. That's promo code IHEART for new customers to get $200 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Only on DraftKings. The crown is yours. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem, call the Virginia Problem Gambling Helpline at 888-532-3500. 21 and over. Virginia only. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. Deposit and eligibility restrictions apply. Terms at dkng.co/ftball.
A musician with technical knowledge can play all the right notes. But one who cares enough to play from the heart gives music soul. At Truist, we believe the same is true for banking. Because when you work with someone who knows a lot and cares even more, you're unstoppable. Truist, leaders in banking, unwavering in care. Start feeling unstoppable. Visit truist.com/care. Truist Bank, member FDIC, leading based on top 10 U.S. commercial bank.